Hi, and welcome to the Man Panel. I'm Michelle Marchand Johnson, your host, and I'm super excited to have you here and really excited about our returning guest, the amazing Mark Rosenfeld. Welcome, Mark.
Thank you for having me, Michelle. It's fantastic to be back. Always appreciate our chats and hangs. So yeah, it's great to be back on the Man Panel.
Yeah, so happy to have you back. It's always so much to feature you, always so much fun to feature you and your work. So, Mark, I know so many of the women are familiar with you and are aware of you from your YouTube channel, but I like to do just a short, real formal intro.
A little formal intro?
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've been coaching one-on-one for about 6 years, for those of you that don't know me. In that time, I've had the gratitude and the blessing of, I guess, leading this industry, at least in Australia. I've been, what else have we done over the years? Basically, I'm one of the few coaches that does a whole heap of one-on-one. So obviously I've been featured on a bunch of different news outlets and things like that. But I still work with women every day. In fact, I've had four client calls already today. So I still love to actually get to know my clients, still get in there, get into the gritty emotions and really challenge them to grow through their blocks. And a lot of the work I do is, yeah, not just working on that deeper stuff, but also the fun dating, getting out there, meeting men and growing that relationship right from the beginning to be the healthiest relationship you've ever had. So
yeah, and you know what, Mark? I think that's such a fabulous thing that you're doing. I also do a lot of one-on-one work and have found it really deeply satisfying to be able to support my clients on that level.
It's nice, isn't it? It's really great.
Yeah, I think we can support people on a different level one-on-one, even though there can be value in groups. And I just wanted to mention, because Mark's kind of humble, but Mark has over 50 million views on his YouTube videos, which I was telling Mark before we started, I have a whole new respect for that with my little baby growing YouTube channel.
With your channel kicking off. It's actually, to put aside the humble tag for a second, where he just clicked over 60, I believe, 60 mil. So
okay.
Yeah, really proud of that.
As you should be. Because from someone that is building a YouTube channel, I can just tell you that represents a lot of time, work, and dedication. So congratulations on that, Mark.
Thank you, Michelle. Appreciate that.
And also his book, Make Him Yours, Beating the Odds of Modern Dating, has been a bestseller on Amazon and is now available on Audible. And just a little side note, Mark also loves cats.
I love cats, and Audible is my own voice.
Really?
So I self-did it. So you get to listen. If you really like me and if you like this interview, you can listen to me for like 6 or 7 hours telling a book. So there you go. That's available as well.
Right. And who doesn't love the sexy Australian accent?
Who doesn't
right?
love an Aussie accent? Come on, guys.
Give me that. Who doesn't love it?
G'day, mate. Get me some Vegemite.
That's right. I love it.
I just ordered $103 worth of Vegemite today.
Really?
To go to this country. Yeah, it was a fantastic decision.
You're craving it and you got to get some in stash, huh?
Yeah.
Okay, I love it. Well, we're going to be tapping into Mark's wisdom and Australian charm, because the whole intent of this series is to help women understand kind of what's going on in the hearts and minds of men. And so I can speak about men, but I can't speak as one. So I'm tapping into my friends here for this. So Mark, we're going to be talking about the one thing that a man needs from you, from a woman, that he'll never admit to. So I would be curious to hear why you chose that topic. And then I think you're going to tell us a little bit about kind of the life of a man and how it differs as a teenager as he grows into manhood.
Yeah, it's always really refreshing being able to talk to my clients and kind of give them a man's perspective on things and what men are looking for. And so much of the shit that we've all experienced in dating and relationships at some point is not because any man woke up and decided, oh, I want to wrong you, I want to hurt you. Every man, 99.999%, wake up thinking, all right, I want to do what's best, I want to make a great decision for this person. But that obviously does go awry. Many of us have been hurt. Many of you have probably been hurt by a man in the past. So it's this idea that the better you can understand men and what is going on in their world, the more you can kind of see through some of their external, somewhat confusing outside behavior and be like, I get it. That's what's going on. Here's what I need to do about it. Not only that, you don't take any of it personally. So I thought today, something I've been sharing a lot with clients lately, we talk a little bit about the worlds of men and this one really important thing that I think gets underestimated a lot by women, and men will virtually never ask for it, but they're always scanning for it from the very first day.
Mm.
Before we get to what exactly that is, Michelle, I just want to talk a little bit about how men grow up and their teenage worlds, because it's a little bit different to that of a woman's. Biology gave us social hierarchies for a reason, right? Without it, there is anarchy, literally hierarchy versus anarchy, lack of order. So we need hierarchies that they serve a real purpose. And in high school is really where those hierarchies start to be established. There's a lot of challenge. There's a lot of sort of posturing for positions on the hierarchy. It's all about, you're in a fundamentally very insecure position. Especially as a man, you've got older men around you as well. You're figuring out your place in the world, what's going to be my purpose. And you have this instinctual drive to make use of your life because, you know, biologically we could wipe out half the men and still have just as many babies. So there's this underlying thing of, okay, what's your purpose here? Why are you here? What are you going to do for this world? And men have that pull a little bit more than, on average, a little bit more than the average woman.
Mm-hmm.
So men are in this hierarchical teenage structure, social structure, which isn't really much fun for anyone and which has its own problems, which we can go into a little bit. But what are the men, what's driving hierarchy in those situations? What do men have to think about all the time? Well, the first thing is they're thinking about performance, primarily physical. So sports are a big thing, size is a big thing, muscles are a big thing. A big part of the hierarchy, which biologically makes sense, comes from sheer size and strength. That's one part of it. The second part that men are driving from is, well, how does that relate in terms of your attractiveness to the teenage girls? You can get up the social hierarchy by, unfortunately, but this is just the reality, by dating the hottest or perceived most attractive person as a man. You don't have to be the biggest or the strongest, but if you've got intelligence or charisma and you can use that to, it's kind of transactional, but it's really what's happening is get social currency by dating a more attractive person. That's an option too. So there's this idea of performance and this idea of the girls. And as men get a little bit older as well, earning potential and financial potential. And men are competing over all these things for about 5, 6, 7 years for social hierarchy. Think about that from man's point of view. What is the one kind of enemy to those things? What is not going to help him be physically bigger or stronger? What's probably not going to help him get the girls? And what's probably not going to help him earn more money or have more earning potential? Unfortunately, what he has to learn to shut down, and there's some really interesting science behind this, what he has to learn to shut down is his emotions. Not all emotions. Anger is usually okay because anger gets stuff done. It's a highly energized emotion. But emotions like sadness, emotions like fear, those emotions cause massive problems if you're trying to climb that social hierarchy. You get called a sissy, or I'll use the word, you get called a pussy, you get called a weakling. Those words are like social death. And it's even worse if it comes from a woman.
Mm-hmm.
So men are in this world and they're growing up and they're going, all right, I want to be bigger or stronger, or I want to at least outperform the other guys in some way. I want to see if I can get some girls and be important enough or have some earning potential. Do you know what will stop me doing that? Being the weakling, or even being perceived as the weakling. So men have this adaption, which is emotions equals weakness. I can't show fear. I can't show sadness. Those two especially. And I definitely can't let that impact my performance. So every man you date has about 5 or 6 years, maybe 7 years of this conditioning. And when it comes to one thing that's very important to you, which is your safety with a man, I'm sure watching this, Michelle, you can agree that feeling safe with a man is very important.
Absolutely.
We often perceive, or I think women I speak to often perceive, that that's kind of a one-sided thing. All right, I want to feel safe with him, but, you know, safety isn't his number one concern when he's alone with me. And you'd obviously be right. Physical safety, men aren't as conscious of that as you are going about their life. But as we just spoke about, every man has this fear of sissy, pussy, weakling, these sorts of words, especially from a woman. So while you can never be threatening to his physical safety, very rarely anyway, the one thing that men are really looking for that they're never going to ask you for is safety. But it's emotional safety. And Michelle, you and I can dive in a bit on how to create this. But safety goes both ways. And I get time and time again, especially my strong, successful clients, women who come to me and they say, Mark, you know, I'm kicking butt a lot. I'm doing everything right. I'm taking charge, making names. I'm earning money. I've got all my shit together. What's going on? Not getting past a second date with anyone. Usually what happens is they are not creating the safety that the women that they are perceiving as less empowered, maybe they're not as financially successful as they are, they're not as established, maybe they're even more dependent. But these successful women come to me and they're seeing other women get the third dates, get the relationships. And often the truth is, particularly in my strong successful clients, is they have not been able to create safety, emotional safety to be specific, and a man instantly vibes towards the woman who does allow him to feel that emotional safety.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is, I mean, I think this is so important. And this is something I've talked with my husband about more than once, Mark, this idea of how important the emotional safety is for a man. And if you think about it, so you've just described really well the journey of a man through kind of the competitive world and trying to figure out his place and proving himself and not being able to share emotions, or he'll look weak, or he'll be called mm-hmm. this name or that name. And when my husband and I have talked about this, one of the things he's talked about is out there in that competitive world that you've so aptly described, they don't necessarily have a lot of outlets to share what's going on inside, their hopes, their dreams, their fears, their failures, their disappointments, you know, the things that they're almost afraid to say to somebody else because they're going to be laughed at or they're going to be called names. And the one place that they potentially do have an outlet for sharing those aspects of themselves is within the context of an intimate partnership, relationship, or marriage. And so if that woman is not able to receive that or have a container for that that is safe, and like you said, men can sense that sometimes very, very early on, or it's going to be a competition with her rather than a partnership with her, then it's going to repel. It's going to be have a repelling force with men.
Yeah, I can share a couple of examples of what I've actually experienced if it's of interest to you. So I'll give you two examples. One's a much more extreme example, and one's a much lighter example, but both were kind of the same thing. I had a client once that came to me and she said, Mark, you know, I've had to be strong all my life. And so it's pretty graphic what she talks about. I'm going to share it now. She said, you know what? I had to be strong. Had two kids. My husband was murdered. Had to get through that. Had to move away. Had to look after business. Had to take care of myself. Right. And then I came here and I'm still doing it. I'm still taking care of myself. I've got to rely on myself. You know, that's it. That's how it is. And she came to me with the presenting issue where she said, well, Mark, I'm not getting past second dates. Like, I'm just not getting the attraction that I want.
Mm-hmm.
And it was interesting because I said, well, are you sharing your story on dates? You know, tell me what's going on these dates. And she later on said, yeah, you know, I tell my story just like I told it to you then. And it's so interesting that often at work or even in a bigger context like she experienced, if something big happens that you need to survive, you do need to dismiss feelings and emotions to get through it, right? Her husband was killed, like literally murdered. And she had to just get on with it. She had a job, you know, to be at. She had two kids to take care of. She moved countries. You can't sit in a sadness pit when, you know, you have to survive. And it's the same at work. A lighter example is, hey, you're having a shocking day, but you still got to go to work and perform, right? You've got to often compartmentalize emotions in life for performance and survival reasons. But for this client, the chronic habit of doing that, she'd kind of done it with everything. And then on her dates, when she came out and told the story, just like I told it then, you know, the truth is men are listening to that and they're like, well, I respect the shit out of you for doing that, But Jesus, if you don't even feel sad when your husband is killed or murdered, then compared to you, your sadness range is like this narrow. So anything outside of that range, I'm going to be the weakling in the relationship. You're going to call me the weakling. I've got to be stronger and less sad than that. And that's scary as shit. No man could do that, right? She's had to be emotionally tougher than most men in that instance. So that's sort of a big, like, blanket example of how she was not communicating this safety. Just because on the dates, the way she told the story, it was basically saying, I got to compartmentalize. Emotions will make me weak. I need to be strong. And strong is what I do for my kids and my family. And again, respect to her for doing that, right? But unfortunately, a man just can't feel safe with that. He's not going to.
Well, because there's no vulnerability there, so it doesn't allow for vulnerability in him.
Yeah.
Like, she's not sharing it. She's sharing it from more of a factual, this is what happened kind of. Way she's portraying it. And yes, I mean, God bless her for having the strength to get through that. But the way she's sharing it, it's not opening any space for vulnerability from him to feel safe, to be weak at any time.
And if he's more vulnerable than her, he's the weakling. Mm-hmm. A smaller example that I think is also worth sharing. I once dated a woman and she was lovely. You know, she was attractive. She was witty. She was very intelligent. She had a ton going for her. And I just noticed that on a couple of dates, and we're actually friends now, I'm still friends to this day, but it was sort of a little bit of dating energy to begin with. And I noticed on the couple of dates, she was a real kind of like sassy shit talker, right? So you kind of, you know, I might share something like, oh, I have a passion for this, or, oh, like, this is kind of a weird or concerning thing about the world. You know, I kind of expressed an opinion or a passion, something not particularly vulnerable, but a little bit getting there. And she was a shit giver. Now, that's fine, unless you do it all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And it got to the point where what I recognized was going on was every time I was like a little bit vulnerable or like expressed something that made me a bit sad, like I'm worried that, you know, I fear the day when my animals pass away, because she'd be like, oh, tap it up there, boy, you got this. You know, it was like fun and she wasn't like negging me or shaming me at all. But because she relied on play so much, I started to realize, and I only kind of figured this out afterwards, but I started to feel that she doesn't go to emotions, and her kind of adaptive mechanism was, I'm going to be a shit giver. I'm going to be the fun, the teaser. And again, that's great sometimes, but if you do that all the time, she could never kind of go there with me and never get into like, oh yeah, here's how I feel about that, or here's something that happened to me. That lack of comfort going there eventually made me feel like I was the emotional space compared to her. And a guy doesn't want to be both the physical and the emotional space.
Mm-hmm.
So we didn't end up dating, and I found myself more attracted to women who held space wider. Not all the time. Like, it's not about doing this stuff all the time, and it's good to be able to sass someone up sometimes. But yeah, I found myself more comfortable with women who could go there and hold space for those conversations when they needed to.
Yeah. Yeah. So, and I know you said this didn't really come across as mean, but the way you're describing it, it sounds like there was just a little bit of an edge and like maybe
her. It was like teasy. Yeah. Like neggy, teasy, just a little bit of like, it was done in a fun way, but it was a little bit like, oh, harden up. Oh, you got this. It was that, I'm trying to think of an exact example, but it was that kind of overly playful, slightly neggy vibe over and over again.
Yeah, well, and if you're expressing something like, I fear the day that my animals die, that actually is pretty vulnerable. And I think what a man would be looking for in that, in sharing something like that, would be a bit of compassion or a bit of like kindness or just more of a gentle reception for something like that.
Yeah, or a match. You know, yeah. Sometimes the guy will lead a vulnerable story, but then, you know, if you like him, match him. Be like, yeah, you know, one of my fears is blank. And if that's like a level 5 for him, match him at a level 5, or try a level 6 and maybe he'll go to a 6 with you. you want to be able to kind of go there in that energy as well. And she just didn't seem to be able to access it, which, yeah, I think in hindsight was a bit of fear about those types of emotions and capacity for them.
Yeah. Yeah. So I want to, if I can, Mark, can I dance with you a little bit on a couple things?
Please do.
So I want to start, you said that when we started this conversation, you said that a man is kind of like looking for this or energetically checking in about this from the beginning. He kind of has a sense that this is something that's important, even if he's not consciously thinking about it.
Yeah.
And so it strikes me that this would start very, very early on, even like to the point where when he's first asking her out. And one of the things I think women don't always recognize is that anytime a man is asking you out or taking things to the next level, wanting to take things to the next level, he's being vulnerable. And I think sometimes women don't see how vulnerable men have to be in a different way to get into a relationship. So I wonder if you could speak a little bit to this and how it like kind of starts from the very beginning, because I think that'll help women to kind of really implement and like be aware of this from the beginning.
Yeah, it really takes me back to my days of social anxiety when you asked that question. And what really triggered me to take action was the fact that I was just so damn lonely. And I wanted like a woman to connect with. Let's say I had some woman friends and I had male friends. I was about 20 at the time in college, but just on an intimacy level, I was so freaking lonely. And so I thought, all right, well, I've had enough pain. I've had enough of this. What do I need to do to change it? And I realized that I had to put myself out there and I had to do it a lot. I committed to going out 3 to 4 nights every week, getting at least 12, well, talking to at least 12 women a night. So essentially at least 12 rejections each night. I was like, fuck it. I'm just going to put myself out there and get smacked enough times until I figure out the social skills or figure out whatever it takes to feel comfortable and confident talking to a woman and hopefully dating her. And it took some time, right? It took probably at least a few weeks to the early couple of months before I actually started having more social skills and hundreds of rejections in that time. And then once I got more comfortable talking, I remember that asking for a number was like way too scary. And the number of women I talked to that I think liked me, but I was too scared to ask for their number. And then it was kissing. I remember one night I gave my friend $100. I said, do not give this back unless I at least attempt to kiss a woman tonight. One that's obviously talking to me and things, but I don't care if I get rejected. Just make sure I try. I'm so sick of getting scared of it. So every way along the path, if the man is doing the escalating and the moving forward, there is a big level of vulnerability to that. And in one way, it's kind of the gift of being a man is that we have to do that. So we're forced to get this rejection resilience over time. But in another way, it is really scary. And that's where the woman's invites can be a vulnerability match for that. You may not be the one asking for his number. You may not be the one walking over to talk to him. You may not be the one initiating sex, but you can certainly invite all of those things. And then it's his job to actually be the doer. And that's the kind of vulnerability dance, which is maybe sometimes he does act first, but oftentimes maybe you give the green light so that he can feel safe acting. And then you give the next green light so that he can take another chance and act. At every stage, the risk of rejection is very real for him. And so you being able to minimize that feeling for him, like give him some green lights, make him feel like, if you like him, make him feel like he's probably going to be successful if he asks you out, initiates sex, invites you, whatever it is, right, that you're wanting him to do. The more you can encourage a man by giving him those green lights and being a little vulnerable yourself with the invitation, the more likely he is to match that vulnerability and actually do the thing that you want him to do.
Mm-hmm.
Like you don't overdo it. You don't have to invite him 6 times. Obviously, that's crossing a line. But you know, do it once, do it honestly, do it genuinely, and you'll get clear. Give clarity to get clarity.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. Give clarity to get clarity. And this has been on my mind a little bit lately, Mark, because I've noticed with a couple of the women that I've spoken to and people that I've been working with, you know, I feel like it's like hard to get a date with them. So on one hand, they want a relationship and they want to go on a date and they may, you know, be out there online and they may exchange messages. But then when a man actually moves to that point of inviting conversation and potentially asking them out, they're always busy, they've always got this or that, and then they're mad that he doesn't continue to keep going. And I'm thinking, well, the poor guy, he's tried four times, and every time there hasn't been you haven't been available, or there has been some reason as to whether you haven't been willing to go out with him. And then they're upset that he hasn't continued to pursue it. And so I've said, you know, he's vulnerable. Every time he's asking you out and you're busy, you may legitimately be busy, but if you're busy all the time, he's not going to think you're really interested in spending time with him or getting to know him better.
That's such a good point. Yeah. And you know, if I'm a man, and if I've asked you out once and maybe you were busy, and I'll go, oh, maybe I'll give it one more shot. If you've been busy twice, like, I have value. You know, why am I going to keep hitting my head against that wall when there's other women that I know would be lucky to date me and probably a lot more open than you? So if you know, if he's showing up with that vulnerability, you have to match it. Otherwise, what can happen is you only attract the guys who are just in for the chase, the guys that want to hit their head against the wall four, five times, six times to win the game. But those guys are the ones that as soon as they catch it, okay, now I'm bored.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
So this is, it's sort of an Eastern European cultural thing, which is I'm generalizing here, but in that culture, often the women are very standoffish. The men do all the chasing all the time, and the women don't have to show that same vulnerability. But then paradoxically, a lot of them have anxiety once they've got the guy because, well, hang on, now he's got me. Am I allowed to show interest? I haven't to this point. Is he going to get bored? The one-way chase is a big problem. Not only does it filter in the chaser guys that you don't want, but it filters out some of the guys who just have high enough self-esteem to be like, all right, well, if you're not going to, you know, make time for me, then I'll move towards those that will. Mm-hmm. So.
Yeah, because yeah, I think, you know, me, having been single myself until I was 43, Mark, when I married my husband at 43, one thing I know is one thing that I did that I think was sort of a defense mechanism sometimes, and I think this applies here, is that I filled my life so full because it kept me from feeling the emotion, the loneliness you were describing, of not having someone in my life, because my life was so full that I hardly had time to think about it and allow myself to feel. And so I think it's great to have a rich, full life, but you have to kind 100%. Of say, is it, you know, where on the priority scale is having a relationship? If you don't have time to go on a date, a man's not going to think you have time to have a relationship. And that's going to shut a lot of men down right at the beginning. So I'm just talking about this emotional safety from the beginning. This doesn't mean that, you know, you can't ever be busy or that you always have to drop everything 100%. To be with the guy, but there has to be a balance here.
A give and take. Yeah. And it's obviously, I just did want to add that we're not saying drop what you're doing and don't have a life. 100% not that. Don't do that, right? Absolutely have a life. Do your shit. That's all such good advice. But, you know, when there's times, if it's a guy you like and you are busy, that's okay. Say you're busy and say, hey, still really want to see you. Would this day work? You know, like put in the effort back so that it doesn't feel like a brick wall thing. It's like, oh, she really does want to see me. Something so simple as like offering an alternate day, saying, hey, I'm really keen to see you. Can we make this work? Your little bit of effort in return, even if you are busy at that time, that means mountains to the guy, because that's a green light. That's like, okay, she's into it. I can keep mm-hmm. chasing. It's not a brick wall.
Yeah. And this term green lighting is one I use with my clients too. I think it's really, really important because I do think a lot of men, you might think that they're confident and bulletproof, but most of them are not. You know, there are those guys that, you know, like you said, will pound their head against the wall. But most guys are a little bit more sensitive to that. If they start feeling like a woman is just not available to them, they're going to move on.
Yeah. Yeah, do you know who the most outwardly resilient guys often are? Outwardly resilient? Buddy, pickup artists.
Right?
And you don't necessarily want that in your life because they've just had so much rejection. They're so good, but they're totally dissociated from the process. But yeah, they'll push and push. So yeah, I like what you're saying there, Michelle. It's like, understand that, yeah, rejection's still going to hurt for a man, just like it hurts for you, it hurts for all of us. And vulnerability, well, what relationship is, it's just shared vulnerability, right? I'm more vulnerable with you than I am with the rest of the world. And that starts with you giving a green light and him acting on it. And that's how you build that, and you get on a date, you're in conversation, maybe he tells a vulnerable story, you match it, and you guys go deeper together. So it's like 100 little things that build that vulnerability back and forth together, build that trust and vulnerability.
Mm-hmm. So I want to ask you one other question about this, Mark, and that is for women, you know, like myself, who out of choice or out of necessity have kind of had to be out there and be strong and self-sufficient and independent for so long, it can almost become like a badge of honor. Like, it's almost like, you know, the client you described who had that very extreme situation of having her husband murdered and having to support the kids. I mean, a certain amount of that was absolutely necessary for her to get through it. But for women out there that, you know, out of choice or out of necessity have kind of had to operate in the world that way for a long time. And a lot of times we're not even really aware of it. I know I wasn't as a single woman. Because I always felt like I was very feminine in appearance in a lot of ways. But I mean, I was taking charge and taking names because I had to kind of get through life and support myself and make things work at that time.
Yeah.
And so how do we, if we're in that category, and I've been there myself, how do we like, first of all, adapt or adjust or just kind of, you know, open up a little bit more to making it feel more safe for a man?
Yeah, I think one of the first things you can do is when you're not at work or when you don't have to be in those types of environments where you have to compartmentalize, you've got to allow yourself to feel. And maybe you're doing that already, but I very clearly remember a conversation with one of my relationship coaches where he said, you know, if you're feeling bad for a day, yeah, sometimes you do need to speak with your clients and sometimes you got to perform for them, right? Harden up and get through it. But at the end of the day, you've then got to come back and feel what you need to feel. And if you don't, over time, that's going to add up and that's going to lead to almost like a clothes cupboard being full of dirty clothes. You just keep throwing the clothes in there and pushing the door shut. At some point, you have more and more anxiety that the cupboard's going to burst open. So you've got to keep feeling what you need to feel at the end of the day, basically. And so taking that into your dates, there's a real piece around, I think a lot of women who have been in those situations, as you say, you might find that it's kind of like a badge of honor. It's like, I can be tough. I'm unbreakable. I'm strong. And I think one adjustment that I really encourage my clients to make, it really everyone to make, but those clients in particular, is to start taking more badges of honor from imperfections and from things, it's like things they might've perceived as weak. So I deserve to receive love because I cry sometimes. I'm a great person because sometimes I make mistakes. I'm amazing and valuable because I have an autoimmune condition. Like really integrating their healthy self-image into their not strength, into their humanness, their mistakes, their negative emotions, all the things that they probably have got used to either judging about themselves or dismissing. They're probably in a world of men, which is like their boardroom, you know, don't be weak. That's a weak emotion. It's like in dating, you've got to shift that aside and understand that your humanness and your value comes from the roughness around the edges. Your ability to connect comes from your weakness. It comes from your negative and vulnerable emotions. Integrating those parts into your self-worth and really valuing, it has to start with you valuing yourself for them first. And the more you do that, the more you start showing up on dates and guys will either love it or not like it. But more and more, as you keep doing it, you're filtering guys that love the rough around the edges, that appreciate the vulnerable shares and the weakness. When you step out of work, integrating those imperfect parts or those parts that you see as bad as actually part of your healthy self-worth, that's really the core work that I do with clients on that. Mm. No more performer, no more strength. It's like, you are lovable, and you are most lovable because you are imperfect and sometimes broken and make mistakes and sad. And that's actually what makes you the most lovable.
It's so true, Mark. And that's so profound, because when we're real, when we allow someone to really see who we are without feeling like we have to put out this perfect persona that everything is perfect all the time and that we're perfect, it makes us relatable.
Right.
It makes it safe for a man to share what's really going on with him. And it opens up that whole possibility of intimacy. Because like you said, that's what a relationship is a deep relationship is when I'm more intimate with you than I am with other people. You get to see this spectrum of who I am.
Yeah, into me see. Have you heard that before?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. This idea, ladies, that intimacy is into me see, as in you see into me more than the rest of the world. So if you really want to build intimacy, bringing that out, bringing the imperfections and the whatever you might have perceived as weak or bad, that emotional side, bringing it out on your dates. And I know a few of you might have questions like, well, hang on a minute, I don't want to be in an emotional mess when I show up on dates. We're not saying take it to like a level 10, right? We're just saying it test being a number or two ahead of the guy. So if he's showing up at a 3, show up at a 4 or 5 yourself. You know, if he starts showing up at a 5, you guys can go deep. You can show up at a 6. But that's the realm. He leads the physical safety. If you guys are going out, he keeps you safe. If you're going to sleep with him, you want the bedroom to be safe. You tend to lead the emotional safety. So that's kind of your role with the vulnerability.
Yeah, and you know, one thing I like to think about when it comes to vulnerability too, and you're bringing up such an important point, Mark, is that we're not saying go out on the first date and spill all of your beans on and all of your emotional stuff. But I think vulnerability includes not only kind of those tender parts of ourselves or the things that we might consider to be weaknesses or fears, but it also, in my understanding, also includes sharing a little bit about our hopes or our dreams or things that light us up or that we're passionate about or that we're excited about.
Exactly.
You know, and so that part of vulnerability can actually be, you know, we often think of it as kind of the heavy stuff,
but
it can
draining.
Also be a lot of fun.
That's a great point. Yeah, we forget that, if you want to call it positive, vulnerability is absolutely a thing. Sharing your passion, sharing your energy, telling more stories rather than, say, asking questions all the time. If you're the type that always is most comfortable asking questions, tell more stories. That's a form of vulnerability. Tell good stories. Tell stories about what's important to you. Even over text, I get my clients to start doing this. Make more statements than questions. You know, the more that you're sharing, the more you're already being vulnerable. Happy or sad is not a thing, right? But from either can be vulnerable. But from the first date, yeah, you don't go level 10 sad. That's just socially unintelligent. But you can definitely go to like level 7 passion and maybe like level 3 sad and just test it out and share and go from there, you know, see if he matches you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, I really love this conversation. I'm really so glad that you're talking about this, Mark, because it's not a topic that I think a lot of people talk about and that is on the radar for a lot of people out there. And I think this emotional safety piece, I mean, my husband and I, as I said, have talked about it a lot. I think it's really, really important to understand and can be a real key to having a successful relationship. So I'm so grateful that you're bringing it up and talking about it in this event.
My pleasure, Michelle. Yeah, it's a topic I'm very passionate about myself.
Yeah, thank you so much. And I want to give you in a minute the chance to leave us kind of the last word. But I know you also have a gift for the audience.
I do.
And I would love for you to tell us a little bit about it. It's the chapter of your book, first chapter of your book.
Yeah, if you're interested or resonating with anything I've shared today, go check out the first chapter of my book. It's the written, not so it's the online copy, not the audible version. But check it out. It talks all about my story and kind of how I got into coaching and how I serve women. And then if you're interested and you like that, you can grab the rest of the book, either audio or standard.
Yeah, if you like that sexy Italian, not Italian, Australian accent.
I like Italian food.
So. I love Italian food and I love Italy, but that I went to the entirely wrong part of the globe. And Mark, I just want to give you a chance if there's anything you want to say, just kind of as a, you know, word of encouragement or inspiration or last word before we wrap up today.
Yeah, I would just say that don't compare your journey to the next woman's. Your journey is unique to you, and you can't compare to your friend who's been in a relationship for 25 years or your other friend who seems to get that guy or your sister who hasn't had this problem. If there's one thing that working with a huge variety of clients one-on-one has taught me, it's that even identical twin sisters can have such different stories that it is literally comparing apples and oranges. So your story is yours. We're here today. Yep, sure, maybe we'd change the past if we could, but we're here today. We've reached this point. Now you've got the awareness. So from now on, you're an adult. You have the ability to write whatever you want from this point forward. So don't compare. Accept yourself where you're at, and then you only live once. So make the changes for what you deep down want.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah, that's such an important reminder, Mark. We're all on our own journey, our own path. So yeah, beautiful thought. So Mark, again, I just am so grateful that you covered this topic so beautifully, and it's so important, and I'm so grateful, and really appreciate your expertise and contribution as always.
My pleasure, Michelle. Thank you for having me. It's always so much fun coming on with you. We have such great chats. So yeah, it was great to be here.
Yeah, thank you. And for all of you watching, thank you also for being here. And we hope to see you for more of the Man Panel. Bye for now.